prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's a new week here, June 18th, and we've got a great show planned. So during the first hour, we're going to be talking to Zad Chow about weaponizing science. What happens when agenda starts to drive nutritional epidemiology? What can you trust, and how do you decipher what to trust? Later in the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Thomas Levy to talk about his new book. Dr. Levy has been talking about this topic for a long time, and now it's actually starting to show up in scientific papers. But what happens to your tooth when you get a root canal? What happens to infection? Is a dead tooth in your mouth a really good idea or not? And what can you do to protect yourself from it? Because there seems to be some emerging science that shows that it may not be a good idea if you can avoid it. Of course, I have to thank All American Pharmaceutical and EFX Sports for their title sponsorship to Superhuman Radio. Right now, you can get 6 of their top-selling products absolutely free because Dr. Jeff believes you shouldn't buy anything until you've tried it. Go to superhumanradio.net, click the EFX Sports banner ad, enter your address, pay $5 and change for shipping, and they will arrive at your doorstep, and you will feel wonderful for getting free stuff. So check that out. Zad Chow, how are you?
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
How are you?
Good, good.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So about a week and a half ago, a study was published that made people start to wonder what the heck is up with some of this nutritional epidemiology. And we're going to talk about that study a little bit later. But before we get into that, I want to talk about nutritional epidemiology overall. I don't think people understand how epidemiology actually works and what can we extrapolate from it at best. So talk about that.
Sure. So epidemiology as a field is kind of looking for patterns in the real world as opposed to doing experiments in kind of controlled conditions. There's an advantage to doing epidemiology because it doesn't cost as much money. People are living, you know, naturally, and you can kind of follow them for long periods of time. The nice thing is that we're also able to kind of, you know, produce relationships that we would not be able to produce in a laboratory setting. So for example, we can't force people to smoke, cigarettes and see whether or not they develop lung cancer. That's not ethical. But what we can do instead is we can look at a population that does smoke cigarettes, and we can see how many of these people actually go on to develop lung cancer as opposed to people who don't smoke. So that's the nice thing about epidemiology as a field. It's that you can do a lot of things that you normally could not do in a controlled experimental setting. So a lot of people, like epidemiology in general, tends to get a lot of flack because, you know, people are like, the best thing to do is always do a randomized control experiment. But I don't actually believe this is the case because epidemiology has given us several relationships between several variables that we would not be able to study in a laboratory setting. For example, we now know because of epidemiology and several other sources that smoking definitely causes lung cancer. We know that LDL is implicated in heart disease. We know that the Zika virus likely causes birth defects. These are things with such strong effect sizes and such strong associations that there's almost no way to think that they don't cause these relationships.
Right.
But this is at like a different field. These are different fields of epidemiology. And then there's nutritional epidemiology, which is a bit of a different field because dietary lifestyles and regimens and nutrition are tied into so many other things.
Well, like wait a minute. Also, doesn't epidemiology generally rely on either diaries or recall? And if, you know, it's easy to test somebody for Zika and see that their child was born with a birth defect. It's like, okay, that's easy to make that connection. And it's even easier if somebody smokes, they smoke. Nobody goes, yeah, I just smoke on the weekends, and see the rate of lung cancer. But when we talk about nutrition, because nutrition is so heavily stigmatized, everybody wants to be seen as eating healthy, that A, we find that memory recall is horrible, and B, we find that misreporting is normal because people will overreport what they perceive to be good behavior and underreport what they perceive to be bad behavior. So immediately, the outcomes are skewed.
Yeah, I totally agree. Social desirability bias is certainly something to account for when we have food frequency recalls. And there have been a lot of studies done on this that find that self-reported dietary intake is just not very reliable. So that's also something to look out for in nutritional epidemiology, as opposed to, you know, other things where you can draw blood samples and know how frequently someone smokes.
Right.
So that is one big issue with nutritional epidemiology if you're not even focusing on the other stuff. Like that in and of itself is
what about variability of food quality? This is something that is very there's an emerging science that really caught on about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, called metabolomics, or however you want to say it, where you eat something and then they look at everything in your body that changes as a result of that food. And so we can see direct influences of nutrition. But when we depend on people to report, what we don't ask them are probing questions about the quality of like meat. You know, meat is this ubiquitous term that means so many things today. And so red meat as well. If it's not pork and it's not chicken, it's not turkey, it's probably red meat of some sort, whether even if it's from lamb. And so doesn't that also confound a lot of the nutritional epidemiology?
It does. But, it's really interesting because whenever you have a clinical researcher, they start off with this amazing plan. It's perfect in their head. They know everything, how they're going to do it. But as you start to design the studies, as you start to actually get the funding, you realize that you can't do what you originally thought of. So you have to make several compromises. You can't figure out exactly what type of meat people ate. You have to start dichotomizing variables, categorizing them. So you lose a lot of information, such as, the variability in food quality and nutrient density. So a lot of these things are omitted because, it's just not feasible to actually study all of those things at once. But because of that, you do lose a lot of information. So it's a double-edged sword. You're saving time and resources, but you're also losing a lot of things.
What about biases? So, yeah. What about existing biases? I want to use a term that was first used on my show in 2006 by Dr. Lauren Cordain. He said, if epidemiologists studied house fires, they would conclude that fire trucks cause house fires because every time there's a house fire, there are fire trucks there. And so what about when nutritional biases and agendas actually drive the outcomes because the scientists are looking for an outcome, so they ignore the obvious. They ignore that fire trucks don't really cause fires, even though they're there 100% of the time. But they publish these papers anyway. What about isn't that just weaponizing science? Oh, we have an agenda, and the agenda today is pick it. Fat is bad, protein is bad, sugar is bad. So we're going to do research. We're going to ignore the obvious, and we're only going to see what we're looking for.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that you mentioned the fire truck example. So in epidemiology, that is a problem. It's called reverse causality. The thing that you think is causing the thing, your outcome, is actually in a totally opposite direction. So the problem is with cross-sectional studies where you kind of do a snapshot of, you know, a population and get a bunch of their measures and then do associations, that's a problem because the thing, your predictor and your outcome could be in a totally different place. Your outcome could actually be the thing that's causing your predictor. Maybe protein isn't causing heart failure. Maybe heart failure is causing protein. So these aren't things that are easy to account for. But with different types of studies, like cohort studies, where you follow a population over time, reverse causality isn't that much of a problem.
Yeah, it's harder. It's harder to do, right?
Yeah, because you're following them over time, and you notice that they develop these things over time, as opposed to, you know, just making people take a survey at once and then running a bunch of associations. Because, right, but when you do a cohort study, you can actually measure whether or not they have something at the beginning of the study, and then you'll see over time how they develop it. So reverse causality certainly is a problem, I agree. And it's something that epidemiology in general has to always account for in some way. They have to do several adjustments, do sequential analyses. So I do agree that that is certainly a problem. On the topic of weaponizing science, it is interesting that you mentioned that because in epidemiology, there's several ways to do the analyses. There's a million ways. In fact, it's probably bordering infinity, right?
Right.
So there's a million ways to do analyses, and every analysis will give you different results. Now, the question is, which analysis did the researchers pick? Did the researchers pick ones that favored their pre-existing biases, or did they happen to be more thorough and transparent and say, we're going to start off with these measures and we're going to follow through and we're only going to do that, as opposed to some researchers who are like, oh, this combination of analyses didn't give me my results, so I'm going to keep trying some until I get some nice publishable results.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that's called selective reporting. There are some nice ways to actually account for these things, which include, you know, running all the analyses possible and then taking the average or the median of those and then reporting that, which is a lot more useful than one, you know, researcher cherry picking a bunch of.
I like that. That sounds, you know, because because what happens now, because the rigors of science require reproducing something over and over again before you say this is true. And so by using a variety of methodologies, let's say you use six methodologies and you throw out the high and the low of whatever target you're looking for. You take the last four and you look at the mean of the influence of those four and you say, okay, here's what we've learned. Then I would buy that. I would buy that because you used a variety of different methods to determine the endpoints and the outcomes. You didn't just rely on one. That could have been the high or the low that you threw out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. This is always a problem. Selective reporting is a known problem. And one of the best ways to, account for this is to establish, before you even start the experiment, before you start collecting data, go online, go on a registry, and tell everyone, what am I going to measure? What analyses am I going to run? And that's it. That's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to go and change anything. If I do happen to change some stuff, I'll explain why in detail. But generally, I'll follow this protocol and not deviate from it. Because this is a known problem. Some researchers will not register what they're going to do, and they'll just, you know, keep looking for stuff until they can find something that's publishable.
Yeah.
So it really is a problem.
Okay. So now here's the other problem, and I know that you've actually, I believe you've written about this. You know, is it important where the money comes from that funds studies? Science is a business, and as a business, researchers need to apply for grants to get funded. And part of the problem with applying for grants to get funded is nobody is going to fund your study if you show that they're wrong. They don't want to know that. They want to know that they're right. And even money coming from the NIH, the NIH gets money from large corporations to do research. A lot of the studies that the NIH funds never gets published because the outcomes aren't what they were looking for. And I don't know who decides what they're looking for. You know, I called for the NIH to publish every single thing that taxpayers paid for, and even that companies have donated money to fund, because that's the fair thing. Because even the NIH is culpable when it comes to selective science that supports agendas, and because science is a business today, people have to provide science that is popular, that the news media can pick up and run with some clickbait headline, and because that is money makes the world go round, even in science. And you know, so when we look at science, is it really important? And if so, how do we know who funded these studies?
Yeah, so I did write a blog post in detail about this. So the thing is, a lot of researchers, when they happen to do research, no matter who funded it, they obviously want to publish their results. Researchers would love to publish their results, but the problem is, let's say someone funded a researcher to study the relationship between curcumin and placebo. They wanted to see the effects of curcumin on inflammation, right? Now, the researcher didn't happen to see any effect of curcumin on inflammation, right?
Right.
Didn't happen to find any effect, right? Now, he wants to publish this, but the problem is that many scientific journals will not accept null findings. They won't accept findings where there is no effect. They want findings that are interesting, that people want to read, that'll get them more subscribers. So this isn't just the problem of the funding agencies. It's also a problem of stakeholders, of scientific journals, of the press. There's just so many people involved. And the biggest problem is that a lot of researchers simply can't publish their null findings. And what they have to do is they just put the experiment in a file drawer and it never sees the light of day. So that's one scenario, right? But there's another scenario where it's like pharmaceuticals are funding trials for drugs. And if the drug trials aren't favorable for marketing, then they get hidden away so that they can, you know, market these drugs as being very effective drugs. So this is also something to keep an eye out for. There's just so many things involved, like saying that science isn't like study funding doesn't matter is, you know, completely, you know, nonsensical in my head, but also saying that study funding, if someone funds a study, you should automatically discount it based off of the funding. I think that's also nonsensical. I think people should have a very, you know, rigorous approach to analyzing science. Look at who funded it. That's something you should always keep in mind. Just look at who funded it. And then go through the entire paper. Look at whether the methods look robust. Do the methods look robust? Do the results look plausible? And what does the other science say? What does the overall body of literature say? And then that's how you should be taking everything in. You shouldn't be discounting studies.
The problem is that 90% of Americans, and I would say Europeans and any country, they don't have the time to dig deep. They don't have the time to educate themselves. They're looking to science to give them a small bite, a little answer that they can make decisions on. And that's become more and more impossible with not only the problems with science, but the whole scale dissemination of information. I mean, in any one day, you can find two posts on Facebook that have scientific studies that completely contradict each other. People's heads are spinning. They don't know what to take as fact anymore.
That's just the process of science. You're always going to find things because of random error or bias that are just going to be different or because of different methods. That's not really the problem. I think the problem is the average American is not going to scientific journals to read scientific papers. What they're going to is the press. They're going to the popular media. It's the job of a science journalist to interview as many experts as possible when a study comes out, be skeptical, look at the overall body of literature. That's their job. It's not the job of the American, the average reader, to do all this digging. They don't have that background. They don't have a background in biostatistics or epidemiology or study methods, nor do science journalists. That's why they should be consulting them and interviewing them and asking them. So I think if people are confused,
it's the media. It's the media's fault.
It's not,
it is.
It's not because of science. Science is always going to produce things that contradict one another. But overall, in the long term, things will start to, you know, sort themselves out in science.
Right.
But it's the media that loves to jump on studies and present them as like these breakthroughs when they're not breakthroughs. They're just small findings.
Right.
So I think the problem is not necessarily science here with regards to confusion. It's really
the media.
It's really just the media.
It's the media. Yeah. And the media is agenda driven. So right now, protein is the new fat. In the 70s, when I was a young man, or younger man, fat was evil. Fat, low fat was all the rage. Fat, fat, fat. Get it out of the diet. Stop eating red meat. Eat lean cuts of beef if you're going to eat meat. And that's changed. Now fat is our friend. So guess what? Protein is the new enemy, and the media loves to blast protein at every opportunity. Zad Chow has a website called LessLikely.com, and you can go and read many of his fantastic articles there. Or if you're a fan of Examine.com, he writes for them as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Be dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
What if a sports nutrition company actually let you try all of their best products for free before you ever bought one? You'd be dreaming, right? Well, you're not dreaming. Head over to EFXSports.com and grab their new sample kit that includes not one, not two, but six of their top sellers. That's right, six different samples of their top sellers sent out to you immediately to try. Just cover a small shipping and handling fee, and they're on their way to you. See for yourself why EFX Sports has taken the industry by storm and why so many athletes worldwide depend on their products, dominate their competition safely and legally. Head over to EFXSports.com right now and click the EFX sample kit in the online store and get your free kit today. Once again, that's EFXSports.com.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained fasted and remained fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without it.
Thrive Market wants to give you $60 in free organic products of your choice plus free shipping just to get you to check them out. Over 4,000 organic products to choose from and up to 50% off all their products. And shopping at Thrive Market is more convenient than anywhere else. Order online or on their app in minutes, day or night, and get everything delivered right to your door. Go to superhumanradio.net and click the Thrive Market banner ad and get your $60 in free organic foods and free shipping today.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Who ever heard of a supplement company that lets you pick the products they make and sell? What you have now, we are All American Body, a factory direct supplement brand proudly brought to you by All American Pharmaceutical. Don't pay more somewhere else. You can get the same or even better products directly from us. Now check this out. All American Body is a brand about you. Tell us what to make next so you can save big. Go ahead and request a specific ingredient. You know, arginine, citrulline, vitamin D, a product type or category, keto, greens, naturals, herbals, nootropics, and even a specific branded product or formula. We'll either copy it exactly or make it even better. And best of all, it won't cost anything close to what you've been paying, period. And if we do end up using your suggestion, you'll get the first bottle absolutely free. We'll also give you full credit on that product's description page. You'll be famous, signing autographs and people asking you to take pictures with them wherever you go. So head on over to allamericanbody.com right now. That's allamericanbody.com and make your product request today. All American Body, crazy savings, insane results.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. We're talking with Zad Chow. His website is LessLikely.com. We're talking about epidemiological studies that focus on nutrition, the potential flaws in them, the areas that they can become biased. I like to use the word weaponized because usually when they are biased, they're biased to support something that's being promoted as healthy. Back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, fat was the demon. Fat was the reason for obesity and everything else. And we've reduced fat consumption in America to a great degree, and diseases and obesity have risen. And so now protein is the new macronutrient to hate on. There's the anti-meat movement. There's the anti-protein movement. There's a vegan movement that's also part of this, Meatless Mondays and all that sort of stuff. And a study was published about 2 weeks ago that basically said high protein, even plant protein, is going to lead to heart disease and heart attack. So you wrote about that on Facebook, didn't you?
Yeah, I happened to talk about it in a group, yeah.
So talk about, so I know Adele Moussa looked at the research and felt that there was a lot of flaws in it. Did you feel the same way?
I wouldn't say there were flaws in it. I like to think there are more limitations. But yeah, we could get into it.
So let's talk about it. So what were the limitations of this study? And because clearly it was biased, because there's so many good studies out there that actually show the opposite is true. And then there's this one study. And then also, because there's only one study, it needs to be taken with that gravity. So what were the shortcomings in this study?
Okay. So whenever there are new studies like this, I always, you know, come in with a mind that if the results are very compelling, maybe this could potentially change my mind. Maybe there's some signal in there, right?
Oh my God! You mean to tell me that you read things with an open mind? Wow!
Yeah, yeah, really surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I come in, even though I love protein, I work out and I need it. I came into this study thinking, okay, there could be some signal here. Let me see what's going on here. But I don't think this is a study where we should be worried. And here's why. So to give some context, this is a study that started around the 1980s. A bunch of Finnish researchers were looking at about 2,400 Finnish men over a span of 30 years. What they did is at the beginning of the study, around 1983 to 1989, when they were enrolling participants, they made them essentially record their food intake for 4 days. So self-reported food intake for 4 days, and then from that food collection, they made associations as to who would, like, over time, over the span of 30 years when the study ended, as to who developed who experienced heart failure, who didn't. So from that data and those incidences, they made correlations, and they found that the group that consumed the most protein, the quartile that consumed the most protein, had a 33% increase in the rate of experiencing heart failure. So now that sounds a bit, you know, worrying, right?
Wow.
You might think, wow,
33%. Dude, I eat about 250 to 300 grams of protein a day. It got my attention.
Well, okay, so get this. These people were eating a total, the median, was about 109 grams of protein per day. So that's not even that much, right?
Right.
It's more than the RDA, but it's
well,
not
I think the RDA is 60, so they weren't dramatically far away from the RDA, and
exactly.
Depending on their body weight, they may have been right where they belong.
Exactly, but to the average person, if they see this, they're going to freak out, right? So there's a 33% increase in the group that consumed the most protein compared to the group that consumed the least protein, right? So now, here's the problem. The numbers here are actually, even though there's a 33% increase, that's actually not very much. Because let me give some context. In nutritional epidemiology, because everything is tied together with so many other things, like diet is tied together with socioeconomic status, several other things, it's hard to actually find effects that are large, associations that are large. For example, when we did epidemiological studies on the relationship between smoking and lung cancer, we saw a 2,000% increase.
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
People who smoked had a 2,000% increase in lung cancer, as opposed to people who did not smoke. This is a 30% increase in the incidence, not in the incidence, but in the rate of heart failure.
Right.
So it's a very, very small effect. It's not a very large association. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. Everything that comes out of nutritional epidemiology has small effects. Diets have small effects on these outcomes. The other thing is that when effects are very small, there's a very good chance that a lot of it could just simply be from random error.
Right.
It may not even be that protein is causing heart failure. It may simply be that, you know, out of these participants, there just happened to be some who are consuming protein and happen to develop heart failure.
Yeah, for other reasons. Really, for other reasons entirely.
Yeah, yeah. So this study isn't, to me, it does not seem like very compelling evidence. But there's more to actually go on this.
Please.
So for animal protein, when they actually stratified the analyses by different types of protein, for animal protein, the group that consumed the most had a 43% increase. But what's interesting is the relationship between dairy protein, and heart failure. So protein from fermented dairy had a 70% increase in heart failure, and protein from milk had a 27% increase. Now, the reason why this is so interesting to me or astounding is because most of the literature around fermented dairy products, which includes sour milk, kefir, yogurt, several other products, generally show anti-inflammatory effects in the body and very good outcomes with regards to heart health. So to me, when I see that, you know, there's a 70% increase in heart failure from protein, from fermented dairy, it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
Right.
This isn't normal. What's happening here? So what's also interesting is that the actual researchers, when they were writing up their conclusions for this paper, they realized themselves that there really were not many biochemical explanations as to why protein from fermented dairy, which is generally a healthy product, could cause such a large increase in the hazard ratio. They were like, what's going on here? And then they concluded that there's a very good chance that it could just simply be from random error. So really, I feel like this paper, when it was written at least, the authors were very nuanced with, you know, everything. I think when it got translated to the media and, you know, they read the press reports, a lot of those nuances got lost in the translation, and people jumped on the title "Protein causes heart failure."
Well, but let's be honest. Why they just got lost? Because we know that people eat a lot of protein today, and we know there's lots of studies that show that higher protein consumption appears to lead to a greater degree of leanness, improvements in metabolic function, improvements in insulin sensitivity, a reduction in inflammation. There was a study that showed that eating beef actually is the only food that actually improves telomere length. I mean, so there's all these, there's this mountain of information that's all pro healthy, high quality protein. And then there's this study that says, no, it's going to kill you. So, of course, there's a large population of people out there who eat protein, actually. And so they're going to tune in. They're going to be like, I got to hear this. Again, it's pandering. It's science pandering. And more importantly, it's driving an agenda. Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Whenever I look at these studies, right, nutritional epidemiological studies, I know that I should just be looking at these only to look. So nutritional epidemiology as a field, right, it's kind of to generate hypotheses, to kind of look for out of a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise, and they're kind of, you know, looking at different places with exploratory analyses to see if there's any signal. And then they want to corroborate that signal with actually very well-designed randomized controlled experiments. So nutritional epidemiology is not going to be changing policy. It's not going to convince the government agencies to change guidelines on protein consumption because the data are not very strong. What will actually change those is large systematic reviews, large reviews of several hundreds or not hundreds, but, you know, several randomized controlled trials. So this isn't even close to that. This is only like, here's some possible signal. This might be worth looking into more. Let's do that in the future. But, you know, most people don't know that. Most people don't know that these types of studies are simply looking for some signal. They think that this is the end. This is the end for protein. This study confirms it. But it's not. This is just a study that's looking for some signal. And it's interesting because this study was kind of well done with the analyses. They actually adjusted for several things.
Did they adjust for carbohydrate consumption? And also, did they adjust for people who were either already showing insulin resistance? So they couldn't do that, right?
So here's what they do. So with confounding variables, there are several ways to actually adjust for them. You can adjust for them in the design phase where you use a method called specification, where you only allow specific people with a certain amount of a confounder, like a certain amount of people who smoke this much only into the study, as opposed to people who smoke this much. You exclude all of those other people. That's one way to control for it. The other way to control for it is use matching. So when you use matching, you have one participant who smokes a certain amount, and then you have another participant who smokes a certain amount. So now you can do analyses between them, and you can know that smoking, any differences between them is probably not due to smoking. Right. So that's one way to adjust for variables, confounding variables that are not your predictor. Right.
OK.
So they've done several things here. They've used statistical adjustments and they adjusted for several things. They adjusted for education, income, pack years of smoking, alcohol intake, leisure time activity, body mass index, family history of CHD, you know, so many diabetes. There's just so many things they adjusted here for. So it is. Pretty like the analyses are well done, right? But the results are not very compelling. They're small. Most of them don't seem to be statistically significant. So really, when I look at this study, it's like there's some interesting, relationships here, but there are some also weird ones, like, again, the fermented dairy protein one. So really, when I look at these results, I'm just thinking, okay, there's some interesting stuff here. I do see a dose dependent response. Like as people consume more protein, I see that they have more incidence of heart failure. But really, again, it could just be random error. The study is small. There could be other confounders that we did not adjust for that we don't know of, right? So there's so many things. And really, when I look at this study, I'm just thinking, okay, it's interesting, but I'm not gonna stop. I'm not gonna change anything because of it.
Do we know who funded that study, Zed?
Yeah, it was actually funded from a grant from the Finnish government.
Okay.
So, from the Finnish Cultural Foundation and Regional Fund. So it was several foundations. It was like a collaboration between foundations and the government.
Interesting. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I want to get deeper into nutritional epidemiology and ask you: are there quick ways that people can apply some critical thinking and kind of get past the nonsense? We're talking with Zad Chow. His website is lesslikely.com. He's got some great blog posts there. He writes for examine.com. Check him out. We'll be right back. Break it right back just to know your name.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
If you suffer from abdominal bloating, relief is here. Introducing
Atrantil.
Developed by a board-certified gastroenterologist, it relieves bloating where it starts, in the small bowel. That's why
Atrantil
works while other remedies don't. In clinical trials, 88% of bloating sufferers who use prescription medications with no relief found
Atrantil
relieve their symptoms, and it's available without a prescription because
Atrantil
is made from a patented molecular combination of botanical extracts. It's not a probiotic. Plus, it's natural, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO.
Atrantil.
Even the name is proven to make you feel better.
Go to lovemytummy.com and use code SHR for 10% off. That's code SHR at lovemytummy.com. Lovemytummy.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
When's the last time you look forward to taking your pre-workout? I mean, like thinking about it the night before, shaking it up, anticipating the way it tastes? The music starts to thump louder. The weight starts to get lighter. Get ready to feel that way. Bounty Hunter is that pre-workout. Bounty Hunter will make you believe in pre-workouts again. Get free shipping with code SHR on a jug of ridiculously delicious, badass vanilla bourbon Bounty Hunter. Go to wildwestnutrition.com or click the banner ad at superhumanradio.net.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Ketocana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Ketocana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketocana banner ad today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Every now and then I get an email from somebody saying that the announcer mispronounces the word glycogen in that ad. And I said, yeah, I know. And I left it that way purposefully because people pay attention to it. Anyway, we're talking with Zad Chow. We're talking about nutritional epidemiology. What can we really take away from it? How do we know? So no one is going to take the time to learn how to better read scientific papers. People are going to continue to depend on the media and TV shows in general to deliver these, you know, these hot topics. And anything that's contrary to our popular belief is a hot topic. How do people weed through it, Zad? I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize that a 30% response in this group was insignificant. I think a lot of people think, oh, my God, my heart attack rate increases 30% by increasing more protein.
Yeah, yeah. So this really, to me, it is pretty concerning, because if we start making personal decisions based off of studies of nutritional epidemiology, where one day coffee is good for you and the next coffee is bad for you, you're going to end up in a pretty bad place.
Yeah, and I want to say something too. One of my biggest complaints about Dr. Oz for years has been, in a single week, he will do two shows that contradict each other, and people don't know what the hell to do anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So to me, the main problem here is that if you go on PubMed, if you go on any scientific database, and you search up a couple of terms that you're interested in, you can find any relationship between anything. You can find any mechanism. You can find any randomized trial that supports your beliefs. The problem is that people love to do this. The solution is to look at large, large reviews, large guidelines that have already, you know, compiled everything, gone through all of it, and come to a conclusion. So those are the things that we should be relying on. We shouldn't be relying on one small study, one small epidemiological study, or one small randomized control experiment. We should be relying on these large systematic reviews, meta-analyses that compile the results of all of these studies and then come to a more nuanced, you know, conclusion. So I think that if people want to, you know, kind of know what science overall says, they should be looking at systematic reviews. They should be looking at meta-analyses. They don't have to go through the methods and do all of that. They can just simply go to the conclusions and see what the results say. So to me, that's a lot more helpful than actually just, you know, reading the media, like a new article that says, oh, there's a new study showing that protein causes heart failure, which isn't very useful, you know? So I like to think that large syntheses are much more useful than, you know,
What about scientists and science journals requiring the media to, the way there's a disclaimer on cigarettes and lots of things, to say, you know, when it's just, this is one study and it's contrary to all of the other research out there and it must be taken as such. Instead, they go on the air and literally, you know, scream the sky is falling. And especially when there is clearly an agenda against protein today, especially animal protein. The irony is that no one is paying attention to a lot of the research about the harmful effects of eating conventionally grown foods, or even Dr. Grundy's book about just in general, the anti-nutrient accumulation from eating a lot of vegetables is worrisome as well. Shouldn't we ask the media to stop fanning the flames of idiocy?
Well, this is actually something I'm always complaining about. I don't know the exact solution, but I do know that some sources, some places that report on this, on the science, are a lot more better than other places. Like Behind the Headlines, which is a blog by the NHS, regularly blogs about new studies that come out, like every single day, and explains them in context. So I think relying on sources like this is a small solution to a huge problem where a lot of science journalists have to meet deadlines. They have to get as many clicks as possible. They don't know how to interpret studies. They don't consult biostatisticians and epidemiologists. So really, there's a lot of problems here. The best solution is to consult as many experts as possible and get a nuanced opinion, in my opinion.
So I see a lot, you know, after reading the story of the human body and interviewing Dr. Daniel Lieberman a couple times on the show, that book had an amazing impact on how I look at everything today in life in general, and especially in science. I love to take things and juxtapose them against what we know about evolutionary influences and see if it really plays out. It makes sense from an evolutionary perspective or not. And when I look at these types of studies and I hear these people, you know, saying things in the media, I automatically discount everything now because I believe that I have a good handle on what is true and what is not, at least for me, not necessarily for everybody else, because we are very unique. Each of us is very, very unique in the way we respond to different foods, the way we respond to sleep and so on. But I've come to the conclusion, there are I see lots of evolutionary selection pressures among us today. They're not necessarily famine, or, you know, ice ages, although, you know, climate change has been the bane of the human race for a long time. But what I see now as one of the contributing evolutionary selection pressures is information. The information that you choose to believe and where you get your information from will have a direct outcome on your health and the health of your family and whether or not your genes will be around 500 years from now, or you somewhere along the line, children that were supposed to pass your genes on die or before they can give birth or they can't have children. What would you say to that? Isn't information now one of the selection pressures?
It absolutely is. Every single decision that we make will obviously influence our lives and lives of the next generations to come. And that information comes from our choices of what we subscribe to.
Right.
So I absolutely agree. The other thing is that a lot of these studies, one thing that we always have to remember, a lot of these studies are focused on the population in general, on averages, on the population, not on individuals, but generally on populations and changing guidelines and changing policies. So whenever we see these types of studies, we shouldn't think this applies to us directly. This isn't necessarily something that's promoting personalized medicine. It's population health studies. So that's something that we should always keep in mind as we're, you know, traversing these studies.
And other things that you can do is to go to websites like LessLikely.com. And read some of the writings there, but then apply that to what you know to be true. You can't take anybody's information as absolutely positive. Say, even this show. I mean, we interview people on the. My opinions on things have changed over the past 13 years because of emerging science. But more importantly, I pay attention and connect dots. You need to do the same thing. You can't abdicate the decisions that you make for your health and the health of your family to somebody on the Today Show who is a special, you know, that's a nutritional person telling you that popcorn is a good thing to eat before bed because, you know, you're less likely to wake up because of the carbs in your system. I mean, you have to pay attention to the things that you know to be true and apply those things that you know to be absolutely true to science. And if science contradicts what you absolutely know to be true, you must ignore science because science has gotten lots of things wrong. Science is not the end all and be all. It's not.
Yeah, yeah. I think that really because most of these studies are focusing on averages, on lots of people, you cannot apply those things always to yourself. So the best way, like I'm a huge fan of experimentation, like self-experimentation and trying things out. I like to think that if I want to try something and I want to know whether or not it works for me, I'll try to do it as rigorously as possible and collect as much data as possible. So if I'm taking curcumin, right, I'll grab a friend and I'll be like, you know, hide the curcumin from me, cover it up in something and give me something that looks similar to it and switch it around. And then don't tell me which one I'm getting. And then I'll have to record how I'm feeling or what results I'm getting. And then at the end of the experiment, he'll reveal which I got. And then I'll know, does curcumin work for me or not? You know, I like to be very rigorous in that regard because while I do love looking to, you know, large studies, randomized controlled trials, systematic reviews, I like to think that I'm an individual with my own variability. I can't always rely on this. I'll need to figure things out by myself. So the best way to do that, to prevent my biases from kicking in, is to blind myself and to have, you know, kind of eliminate as much as possible and figure out what works for me and what doesn't. So I do love taking a rigorous approach.
Looking at the protein equals heart disease study, are you more likely or less likely to follow the information that you learned from that research?
Yeah, definitely less likely. definitely less likely.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I think the study is interesting. I don't think it's very compelling evidence. I would love to see where this goes, what this brings up. Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting is that in the conclusions of this paper, they actually tried to cite. So what they said was high protein diets, high protein, low carbohydrate diets actually increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. But they cited a study that suggested that, right? And as I was reading this, I was wondering, why would you cite this study but then not give context as to all the other randomized controlled trials where a high protein, low carbohydrate diet is used to manage diabetes, type 2 diabetes? Why would you cite this study that where it shows it increases the risk of type 2 diabetes but discount all of the other studies where it's actually used to treat it? Why not include it? And that just reminds me that when scientists are writing these papers, they're obviously going to look through PubMed to find only a few papers that support their argument. They're not looking at all of the evidence and including it. They're only including what fits their argument.
Well, doesn't that obviate their bias when they do that?
To me, it does. I mean, maybe it's a bias. Maybe it's an agenda. Maybe they just don't know. I don't know. You know, it's hard to know what people are thinking.
No, you know what I think it is, Ed? And you know, I am not a scientist, and so I could be like so wrong with this statement. But I think that if I'm doing this study and all of a sudden protein is coming up as linked to heart disease, I know that is going to be a huge, huge splash in social media. It's going to go viral because it is so contrary to everything else out there. And as a result of that, I don't want to dispel that. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to be like, oh, this is great. I'm going to publish this study. Everybody's going to pass it around because this is so counter to everything else out there. And I'm not going to look for studies that may challenge my outcome.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. I think if I want to build a strong, you know, I'm like, if I want to build a strong case for something that's very contrarian, I want to take everything into account, right? Everything. Consider every possible scenario so that people can't criticize me for being selective or biased because I've included everything. I think, if anything, that would actually make the authors, you know, that would give them more legitimacy. But in this case, they happen to, you know, not include all of the studies that contradicted their argument about high protein diets and the risk of type 2 diabetes. So yeah, it certainly is disturbing to me, but you know, this isn't a problem that's specific to this paper. It's prevalent throughout the entire scientific literature. So yeah.
Zad Chow's website is lesslikely.com. You can go there. He's got some great blog posts to become educated, make better decisions, you know, find the right information because the wrong information will shorten your life. Zad, thanks for being on the show today, man.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Take care. We'll have you back on. I'm looking at some of your other blogs. I like these. There's some real good ones we can talk about, okay?
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, take care. All right, we're going to take one quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Thomas Levy to talk about his new book, The Hidden Epidemic, and it really is worrisome. I don't know why the media isn't talking about this if they're talking about high protein and heart disease. Wait until you hear it. Stay tuned.
I'm Ashley Grace, co-founder of H-Hemp Company. Hemp CBD improved my life so much that I started H-Hemp Company to help others naturally feel better. You don't have to have had a severe brain injury like me to benefit from H-Hemp Company products. If you're struggling to feel better, calm your brain, or better deal with daily stress and want to do so naturally, please try H-Hemp Company products. Search H-Hemp Company and use code SHR for 20% off and free shipping. That's H-Hemp Company and code SHR.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Who ever heard of a supplement company that lets you pick the products they make and sell? What you have now, we are All American Body, a factory direct supplement brand proudly brought to you by All American Pharmaceutical. Don't pay more somewhere else. You can get the same or even better products directly from us. Now check this out. All American Body is a brand about you. Tell us what to make next so you can save big. Go ahead and request a specific ingredient. You know, arginine, citrulline, vitamin D, a product type or category, keto, greens, naturals, herbals, nootropics, and even a specific branded product or formula. We'll either copy it exactly or make it even better. And best of all, it won't cost anything close to what you've been paying, period. And if we do end up using your suggestion, you'll get the first bottle absolutely free. We'll also give you full credit on that product's description page. You'll be famous, signing autographs and people asking you to take pictures with them wherever you go. So head on over to allamericanbody.com right now. That's allamericanbody.com and make your product request today. All American Body, crazy savings, insane results.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
You and I, we may look the same, but we are very far apart. There's bullet holes where my compassion used to be, and there is violence in my heart. Into fire you can send us.
Welcome back. Sorry, I was watching Tom Platz's motivational video on Instagram. Very, very wonderful. I got caught up in it. Sorry about that. Okay, so is there a quiet epidemic occurring, and is it starting in your mouth? We've touched on this in the past, but it needs to be discussed again because there is emerging science out there that shows that there could be a linkage between what happens in your mouth, some specific things we're going to cover with Dr. Thomas Levy in a second, and the occurrence of heart disease and certain cancers. How are you doing, Dr. Levy?
Really good, Carl. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. So your most recent book, The Hidden Epidemic, you shine a light on some specific procedures that occur within the dental community that actually could be promoting future disease states. Is that correct?
Well, I would only modify what you said to say that the evidence is conclusive. It doesn't suggest a connection. It absolutely establishes a cause and effect relationship between infected teeth, infected gums, infected tonsils, and just about every chronic degenerative disease there is, especially heart attacks and breast cancer.
So the jaw area of the body and the heart share a unique relationship. When people suffer ischemic events, they will talk about pain radiating into two places, the left arm and the jaw. What is that relationship between the jaw and the heart, Dr. Levy?
Well, the nervous pathways, that's interesting. It does indicate by itself a probable correlation, but when we look at the data is overwhelming. In one study, Carl, they examined specimens that were carved out of the coronary arteries called atherectomy, an angiogram, in patients that had coronary artery or atherosclerotic disease. And then they examined those plaque specimens. Well, in those plaque specimens, they found a variety of greater than 50 different pathogens in terms of viruses, bacteria, fungi, protozoa, etc. And in each particular specimen, they found between 2 and 9 of those different things. So each one sort of has a different pathogenic flora, but it's all there. And the really kicker here, which I just wish my fellow cardiologists would wake up and smell the roses, is this was found in 34 out of 34 different specimens. And I think that's called 100%, Carl. But even if it's not 100% across the board, if you examine several thousand specimens, I guarantee you it's going to be there well over 95% of the time. So this means oral pathogens, and the case made in the book, oral pathogens coming from infections that are painless and asymptomatic, are the reason, directly cause and effect, for greater than 95% of all heart attacks.
Now, another area that obviates this, I've used that word twice in one show. I have to stop that now. is when we look at saliva testing of different components found in the blood. We know that the saliva is a natural filtrate of blood. But it's not just a one-way relationship. Things that are in the mouth seem to be able to find their way into the blood as well, especially when people suffer from inflamed gums. It's almost like it opens a pathway into the inner body, huh?
Well, it's not just finding the way into the blood. We know now that these pathogens find their way, as you said, into the blood, make their way to the heart. They find their way into the lymphatic system, which is why the breast and breast cancer are so high on the list of diseases that are directly caused by infected teeth. You can even see on thermography the red lines going down from these infected teeth directly into the breasts. But even, as you mentioned with saliva, the periodontal pathogens, the gum pathogens, and the infected teeth pathogens are present in the saliva. And guess what? There's a greater incidence in people that have these type of infections of GI cancers, cancers of the stomach, cancers of the intestine, and they isolate the same characteristic periodontal and oral pathogens in those cancers as they do in the heart and they do in the breast.
And the studies that you're referencing, these are not epidemiological studies. These are actual studies that identified cause and effect of these problems, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we talk about cause and effect, I mean, there's this almost pathological or neurotic tendency in the mainstream literature these days to never reach a conclusion. No matter how overwhelming the evidence is, invariably the conclusion is, well, this suggests a correlation and is a strong indicator that more studies need to be done. Well, we have the one study in 2013 by Dr. Tanja Pesi and her colleagues in Finland. They coordinated with a group of cardiologists at their institution. And these cardiologists, when people would come in with acute heart attacks, myocardial infarctions, this is invariably due to a coronary blood vessel that has been blocked off completely, which is almost invariably due to a partial blockage with an acute platelet blood clot then completely obstructing the artery, causing the heart attack. Well, these cardiologists would suction out that acute platelet clot that blocked off the artery completely and give it to Dr. Pesi and her colleagues for examination. Well, in 101 patients studied in this fashion, 80% of them had pathogens characteristic of the profile seen in infected root canals, and another 30%, I know that's greater than 100%, but that's because both are contributing to the same blood clot, they found the characteristic pathogens of gum disease, periodontal disease. Well, there was one other thing that was of great significance in this study. These pathogens were present inside these blood clots at a 16-fold, a 1,600% greater concentration in the surrounding blood. Now, if you can't comfortably come to the conclusion that's cause and effect, and that's just some sort of crazy correlation, I don't know what type of logic-based mind you do. You certainly didn't develop a sterile blood clot, and then all of a sudden, magically, all these mouth pathogens came in and acutely colonized this acute blood clot. No, of course, the concentration was there from the start, and it was the presence of those pathogens causing increased oxidative stress that promoted the blood clot that blocked the blood vessel off. So the only other amazing thing about this study is 2013, that's 5 years ago now, it was published in Circulation, which is the primary subspecialty journal of cardiologists. So I'm just wondering if my fellow cardiologists and colleagues read their own journals.
Well, so let me play devil's advocate, and this is in an effort to educate me as well. For a long time, I've said, because saliva is a natural filtrate of the blood, that if you build up calculus on the back of your teeth often, you go get your teeth cleaned and you always have a lot of calculus on the back of your teeth, this is indicative of what's going on inside the body as well. And my assumption was that the mouth was the canary and what's going on in the mouth is going on in the body. But what you're saying is it happens first in the mouth and then it goes into the body, right?
Well, it's both scenarios. Let me tell you what I mean by that. You certainly have, when you have chronic infections in the mouth, these cause increased oxidative stress, increased inflammation, increased inflammatory markers like CRP, C-reactive protein, to disseminate throughout the body. Okay? So at the same time, you're setting the stage for these pathogens to seed directly into the coronary arteries, you're also causing a diffuse state of increased inflammation and oxidative stress throughout the body, which directly deranges the blood chemistries that you're talking about and promotes the calcification in the form of calculus or in the form of kidney stones or in the form of calcified arteries, anywhere you want.
Oh, I got it. Okay. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to talk about this phenomenon. And I also want to talk about what people can do, because I hate to point out problems without giving people some solutions. One of the solutions could be buying the book, Hidden Epidemic. It's available at Amazon.com and also at Dr. Levy's website. What's your website again, Dr. Levy?
PeakEnergy.com, P-E-A-K Energy, P-E-A-K Energy, Peak Energy.
Okay, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
If you suffer from abdominal bloating, relief is here. Introducing
Atrontil.
Developed by a board-certified gastroenterologist, it relieves bloating where it starts, in the small bowel. That's why
Atrontil. works while other remedies don't. In clinical trials, 88% of bloating sufferers who use prescription medications with no relief found
Atrantil.
Relieve their symptoms, and it's available without a prescription because
Atrantil
is made from a patented molecular combination of botanical extracts. It's not a probiotic, plus it's natural, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO.
Atrantil,
Atrantil. Even the name is proven to make you feel better.
Go to lovemytummy.com and use code SHR for 10% off. That's code SHR at lovemytummy.com. Lovemytummy.com.
What if a sports nutrition company actually let you try all of their best products for free before you ever bought one? You'd be dreaming, right? Well, you're not dreaming. Head over to EFXSports.com and grab their new sample kit that includes not one, not two, but six of their top sellers. That's right, six different samples of their top sellers sent out to you immediately to try. Just cover a small shipping and handling fee, and they're on their way to you. See for yourself why EFX Sports has taken the industry by storm and why so many athletes worldwide depend on their products, dominate their competition safely and legally. Head over to EFXSports.com right now and click the EFX sample kit in the online store and get your free kit today. Once again, that's EFXSports.com. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Hi, I'm Ashley Grace, co-founder of H-Hemp Company. Hemp CBD improved my life so much that I started H-Hemp Company to help others naturally feel better. You don't have to have had a severe brain injury like me to benefit from H-Hemp Company products. If you're struggling to feel better, calm your brain, or better deal with daily stress and want to do so naturally, please try H-Hemp Company products. Search H-Hemp Company and use code SHR for 20% off and free shipping. That's H-Hemp Company and code SHR.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Thrive Market wants to give you $60 in free organic products of your choice plus free shipping just to get you to check them out. Over 4,000 organic products to choose from and up to 50% off all their products. And shopping at Thrive Market is more convenient than anywhere else. Order online or on their app in minutes, day or night, and get everything delivered right to your door. Go to superhumanradio.net and click the Thrive Market banner ad and get your $60 in free organic foods and free shipping today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Levy about his new book, The Hidden Epidemic. It's over 15 million root canals are performed every single year, Dr. Levy. This is a startling number of root canals. People just accept them because their dentist says, oh, we have to do a root canal. Or the option is pull the tooth, do an implant. Obviously, taking care of your teeth is the best alternative, but periodically people need to have these done. You've come on my show years ago and said, these teeth are basically rotting. It would be tantamount to, let's say you needed to have a leg amputated. And instead of amputating it, they just removed all the nerves from it, but they let it hang on your body and rot and fester and poison you. So what are people to do?
Well, when you're dealing with a tooth that's infected, which is the case most of the time where they rationalize that a root canal needs to be done, they do, as you say, they carve out the pulp of the tooth, and all the nerve pathways are taken out in the process, and then it's filled up with a material that's relatively inert in the hopes that it's going to seal the tooth off and no products of chronic infection will leak down into the apical area and then be disseminated in the body. And this sometimes does work. So I want, first of all, for people to understand that I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if you have a root canal, it's a death sentence. I will say for many people, it's a death sentence in terms of directly causing a heart attack, directly causing breast cancer and other problems. But in a fairly large number of people where the root canal was done in a very expert fashion by a high-volume endodontist and the seal was good, and these two things are important too, you have a perfectly normal sex hormone balance, estrogen or testosterone, and you have a perfect thyroid hormone balance in your body. When all those circumstances are met, even though the tooth is always chronically infected, in that subset of patients, and I can't tell you how big or how little it is because that research has not been done yet, but in that subset of patients, the infection will stay put.
Mm-hmm.
The body has a way, when everything else is good with the immune system, to wall off infections and keep them from disseminating. On the other hand, when the immune system is weak, when the hormone balances are not perfect, these infections disseminate readily and cause a large number of problems. Now, in the case of the book, The Hidden Epidemic, this is the important thing, is that aside from root canals, there's a very substantial number of teeth that are chronically infected but do not hurt at all. Furthermore, they do not show up routinely on regular x-ray. There's a new technique out there called cone beam, 3D cone beam imaging, or better easy to call it 3D x-ray, that brings out these infections and shows them very clearly and very elegantly. So when you have an infected tooth like this, even though it doesn't hurt, which is the case actually greater than 95% of the time, ironically enough, when you have this infected tooth, it's even more toxic than a root canal because it's got its full content, full bulk of infection. It's got no sealing off. And when you chew on these, they squeeze the contents into the venous blood, into the lymphatic system. So ironically enough, and this is something that gave me great pause when I wrote the book, but I looked at all the articles and it was a logical conclusion. Although the safest alternative, clearly, for your general health is to have such a tooth properly extracted and the socket cleaned out, if the patient tells the dentist or the doctor, it doesn't hurt, I do not give you permission to extract the tooth, do whatever else is best for me, under the circumstances where tooth extraction has been denied, then doing a quality, and I emphasize quality, root canal treatment much of the time will cause less net toxicity and infection to disseminate into the body. So the whole book is trying to tell people to routinely get this 3D test and trying to encourage dentists and endodontists to start doing studies so that we can identify which root canal treated teeth are causing immediate problems and which root canal treated teeth can be identified as not causing a great deal of problem with the health.
And so all you have to do is have one of these 3D x-rays to start the ball rolling and discovering that.
That's correct. And I like to say, too, that as we mentioned earlier, these infections in the teeth cause body-wide severely increased oxidative stress and inflammation throughout the body, which sets the stage for all disease.
Well, it probably also contributes to autoimmune disorders, because we talk about the gut leaking into the bloodstream and triggering an immune response that ends up causing the body to attack some of its own tissue. I have to believe that when these bad actors are constantly slipping in to the bloodstream through the mouth, that the immune system becomes confused on what to attack and what not to. I wonder if there's any linkage to the development of autoimmune disorders and these problems in people's mouths.
Oh, no question. Absolutely, for sure, Carl. And I would add this, too. I mean, a lot of people who are listening to us right now think, well, that's just a problem that old people get. You know, they don't take care of their teeth, and eventually they become infected. Well, that's true to a certain degree, but it does not cover the full range of possibilities. For example, I mean, children can have lousy teeth, too. If you have a 5-year-old kid that develops leukemia, you sure as heck better get this 3D exam to make sure that you get rid of any teeth that are chronically infected, because you're going to see chronically infected teeth a substantial percent of the time, even in a young person, 5 years old, if they have a life-threatening disease such as leukemia or cancer.
Yeah, because you're going to take the burden off of the immune system and allow it to pay attention to something more important like the cancer. So it sounds to me like I have an old amalgam filling that I'm actually having removed next month, because it occupies a very large area of the tooth, and the doctor said that, you know, over time, these amalgam fillings, they end up with a small space between the tooth and the filling where stuff can get in and out of the tooth. And he said the filling isn't loose yet, but it's going to be. And so he's going to replace it with a polymer. When you have these amalgam fillings that are probably over 10 years old in your mouth, are they more susceptible to developing pockets of infection inside them?
Well, I don't have a study to answer that, but I would say, in my opinion, absolutely, because as your dentist said, they never fit perfectly. When you chew on something long enough period of time, especially if there's any mobility or motion at all, you cause repeated blunt trauma and you cause cracks and fissures to develop in the tooth. And when a given crack makes its way all the way into the pulp, guess what happens? The tooth is infected and it's a goner. Okay. I would certainly suggest in your particular case that before you even go to the trouble of having that filling removed, you too should get the 3D x-ray examination, not only examine all the teeth, but to make sure that large filling hasn't already resulted in an apical abscess, in which case you're wasting your time with another filling and you should go straight to extraction. However, let me also say this, you know, when an internist sees a patient come into his office for the first time or her office, does he say, oh, you've got diabetes, and I'd say the blood sugar is 330? Of course not. That's silly. Diabetes is asymptomatic overall, and it can't be determined without a blood test.
Right.
Well, if you walk into the office and the dentist says, well, you got a lot of problems, you know, I'm pretty sure you have an infected tooth, but it doesn't hurt. Well, that's silly, too. All right, if it doesn't hurt, there's nothing to point toward getting that test except for the fact that it statistically occurs a substantial amount of the time. The overall takeaway here, Carl, is everybody, in my opinion, should routinely get this test when they first see the doctor, just like they get a biochem panel and a CBC.
Right.
They need to have
before,
a baseline.
And then you do that before your first visit so your doctor can look at something and go, oh, your estrogen's kind of low. And yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, is let's say you're an 18-year-old kid in high school or first year in college and you're going out for the football team and you get a physical exam. You should get it then, too. Why? Well, if it's perfectly normal, great. But think about the fact that when you develop a problem, or a pain or an ache or an elevated blood sugar when you're 31 years old, you redo that test and you see whether a tooth has gotten infected in the meantime and you have something to compare it against. So my whole point of this book is to promote this as a routine evaluation because my opinion, there's not a study to exactly nail this down, but my opinion is probably well over 70 to 80% of substantial chronic degenerative diseases, arthritis, lupus, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's, you name it, starts with infected teeth that do not hurt. 100% of chronic degenerative diseases are fed and accelerated by the presence of these infected teeth. So we have to expand our horizons and finally realize that the mouth is intimately part of the body and intimately integrated with the physiology of the body. And when you have an infection between two teeth, that you can generate enormous pressures and disseminate the products of a chronic infection every time you chew.
Right.
It's absolutely lunacy not to completely and thoroughly and totally evaluate the oral cavity for these type of infections anytime you're treating anybody for anything.
Dr. Levy, is the 3D x-ray common in dental offices today?
It is now. Most specifically, probably pretty much 100% of implant dentists now have it. A large number of endodontic root canal specialists have it, and a growing number of large but general dental practices have it. But every big city has implant dentists. And the other thing, too, is the implant dentists, I mean, let's talk about some practical considerations, should open their arms to any doctor who wants to routinely send his patient or her patient for a 3D exam to look for these infections, because guess what happens when they find them? When they find them, the recommendation is extraction, and if the patient can afford it, the best option immediately following the extraction is to proceed with a good quality implant. So once the dentists catch on here, and I'm not going to assign any horrible motivations here, but they're going to realize their business is going to astronomically increase once we realize there's all these chronically infected teeth out there. It needs to become a routine part. The one thing I say before I forget about it is once a doc develops a relationship with a dentist or an implant dentist in town to send for this evaluation, it needs to be 100% clear that the purpose of the test is to look at these root tip apical infections. I say that because this test has so much information on it. I mean, your entire head it looks at, really.
Right.
And unless you focus the interpreting radiologist, dentist, or physician on the fact that you specifically want every apical tooth to be looked at in all angles, you'll still miss some of these things, even though you did the 3D test. I mean,
now these X-rays now are low power because they've digitized them. So there's no we've talked about these 3D, these 360 degree X-ray machines back in 2008 when I had Dr. Mark Gordon on, but back then there was a concern of oversaturation, overexposure to ionizing radiation. But what we know now is that these machines put out very, very little X-ray frequency anymore because they're digital, right?
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it definitively, but it's my understanding that that a quality current 3D cone beam examination actually exposes you to less radiation than a chest X-ray.
Yes. Yes, and that's actually my understanding. Okay, I want to take one commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk about a prophylactic approach. I know you've come on my show in the past and talked about things that people can do in the meantime if they suspect this, that they can actually help their immune system cope with it. We're talking with Dr. Hold on. Uh-oh. Okay. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Levy. We're talking about his new book, Hidden Epidemic. I almost crashed my computer just now. We're talking about his new book, Hidden Epidemic. You can get it at Amazon.com. But the bottom takeaway is that this new 3D x-ray is required to rule out the possibility that you are living with infections that are breaching your jaw, getting to your bloodstream, and could be hurting other parts of your body. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoKana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Kana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Kana banner ad today.
What if a sports nutrition company actually let you try all of their best products for free before you ever bought one? You'd be dreaming, right? Well, you're not dreaming. Head over to EFXSports.com and grab their new sample kit that includes not one, not two, but 6 of their top sellers. That's right, 6 different samples of their top sellers sent out to you immediately to try. Just cover a small shipping and handling fee, and they're on their way to you. See for yourself why EFX Sports has taken the industry by storm and why so many athletes worldwide depend on their products, dominate their competition safely and legally. Head over to EFXSports.com right now and click the EFX sample kit in the online store and get your free kit today. Once again, that's EFXSports.com.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com, Trojan Horse.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today. 74% of Americans are living with digestive issues. They take pills and potions to mask the symptoms but never address the root cause. Introducing GI Ultramax Pro, a complex of scientifically substantiated all-star ingredients that reestablish your gut's operating system, allowing you to be better shielded against the bad actors in your food and environment. The gut is complicated, and it takes GI Ultramax Pro to deliver real, long-lasting results. Go to superhumanradio.net and click the GI Ultramax Pro banner ad, or visit MotherEarthLabs.com and use code SHR for free shipping.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Levy. We're talking about this hidden epidemic that's in your mouth. Dr. Levy, so in the meantime, can people do anything to protect against the possibility of infiltration of infections that reside in their mouth causing other problems in their bodies?
Absolutely. The best things that I know of, I already pretty much alluded to earlier. But in addition to optimal supplementation, and I can be more specific about that later, also making sure with your physician, hopefully you can find a physician who's willing to be open if it's something that he or she doesn't routinely deal with, but I mentioned you need your sex hormone status completely balanced. I mean, anybody, it's my opinion that anybody, I don't care how old they are, should treat abnormally low sex hormone levels.
You know what's really interesting about this? In 13 years, I've watched HRT be treated like some excursion from sensible medicine to now starting to become embraced. And I've also watched the idea that sex hormones play any role in the etiology of any diseases be rebuked 13 years ago. And now, all of a sudden, Dr. Dale Bredesen and his fantastic book, The End of Alzheimer's, one of the things that he does with the Bredesen protocol, that he's actually reversing all, he's done two studies at UCLA now, reversing, he can't say he's reversing Alzheimer's because they're not doing brain biopsies, but he says you can completely reverse the symptoms of Alzheimer's. And one of the things he does is he gets these people on HRT because almost always, unequivocally, they are desperately low in testosterone, in estradiol, in progesterone, even pregnenolone. Now you're telling people, oh, these problems in your mouth, you can protect. It's finally coming full circle, and we can't ignore it any longer. You know, sex hormones are not something that, oh, they disappear when you're older. Don't worry about it. No, worry about it. They open up a lot of opportunities for the body to break.
Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is, and I'm going to be a little cynical here, I think a lot of older people aren't treated for low sex hormones because it's too time-consuming for the doctor. Okay, these are things you have to monitor, look at serial blood work, see how the patient's doing, don't overshoot and get the levels too high, and all this involves spending a little more time with the patient, getting a little more frequent laboratory testing. Now, having said that, we do have data on the thyroid. And as much as I just said about hormone replacement therapy, it really appears that thyroid hormone is the most critical, not the only, the most critical regulator of increased oxidative stress in the body. The sex hormones are important, but they probably don't hand a candle to the thyroid. Back in the 1970s, Dr. Broda Barnes treated some 1,500 older people over a 20-year period with thyroid desiccant replacement hormone therapy. And of course, if you don't know about Dr. Barnes, he had a very clinical approach, body temperature, et cetera, a bunch of other things. And he was very skilled at recognizing when people were clinically low thyroid. Anyway, out of 1,500 patients, think of this, over a 20-year period, and they had the diabetes, they had the root canals, they had the high blood pressure, he didn't screen anybody away from anything. They were like 1,500 regular older patients over a 20-year period. Four of them got heart attacks. Now, if you look at the Framingham study, 75, 80, 85, 90 should have gotten heart attacks, statistically speaking. And when he had patients who dropped off of this protocol, a large number of them got heart attacks as well. So thyroid hormone is super critical. The only thing I would add to this is regular thyroid hormones are close to worthless and even more so often misleading. It just really looks at what's going on with the thyroid gland, which is logical, but guess what? The thyroid gland is not where the action is at when it comes to thyroid hormone impact. It's every individual cell of your body, because the thyroid gland makes T4, which is inactive, and it converts it to T3. Well, guess what? The thyroid only converts about 15% And the other 85% is converted inside each cell of your body by enzymes called deiodinases. So you need to measure something called reverse T3 and compare it in a ratio to regular T3. And you need to keep that ratio 18, 19, 20, 21 to 1 to have a healthy thyroid status. And if you're in 16, 15, 14, 13, you're having problems with your thyroid, and it doesn't matter what the regular thyroid hormone test shows.
Interesting. Interesting. And doesn't so let's talk about supplementation, because this is a great segue here. So supplementing with things like tyrosine and selenium, because the selenoenzyme cascade is the reason that T4 converts to T3 in tissue, right?
I'm not familiar with that specifically, so I'm not going to corroborate or engage you on that one.
Okay.
I will say this. There are so many quality supplements out there. There are far more than you can either afford or you can possibly take because your stomach would be full. I like to tell people that you have certain critical baseline foundational supplements. Possibly the most important one is not, guess what, not vitamin C, it's magnesium. Because without the proper levels of magnesium in your body, you keep your oxidative stress, you keep your calcium high inside your cells, and all diseases are accelerated. So magnesium is critical. Vitamin D maintained in the normal range, 50 to 80 nanogram per cc. Vitamin K, especially K2, and of course, vitamin C. And the interesting thing too, Carl, is each one of these baseline foundational supplements by themselves have been shown to decrease all-cause mortality. In other words, you supplement them correctly, you decrease your chance of dying from anything. That means it's impacting all cells of the body equally. Otherwise, one disease would be more affected than another. Now, having done that, without foundational, obviously B-complex is important. Also important to avoid copper and iron. Also important to take a regular iodine source, iodorol, because it's very hard for your thyroid to ever get normal health, even with the assistance of good supplementation, if you don't give it a chance to detox itself, which iodine helps do, and also gives you more of the baseline components to help synthesize healthy amounts of thyroid hormone. And of course, there's many other things that are good. I particularly like pantothene because we're seeing that pantothenic acid is foundational in making some of the energy substrates inside the cell, but not pantothenic acid because that's calcium pantothenate. Mm. And most people that know anything about me know that I say you steer clear of calcium.
Right.
Don't take calcium. Don't take iron. Don't take copper.
No, because if you eat a well-rounded diet, you're getting more than you need already.
Absolutely. At least of those particular things. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
So I want to go ahead and just wrap up the interview, and I want people to think about this a little bit harder, because we all have had work done in our mouths. Obviously, some of the supplements you point out can maybe mitigate the potential harm done from what's going on in our mouths. And we have to get these 3D x-rays done to truly identify if, in fact, there are any culprit. But is there ever any symptom that you can say, you know, if you're starting to feel these things, chances are it's already working on you?
Well, you have the generalized symptoms. I mean, anybody that has generalized increased oxidative stress basically has depleted energy, okay? They're either tired or fatigued. All the other ones are nonspecific, you know, joint pain, headaches, fibromyalgia, this sort of thing. I can't say that there's any typical symptom of being out of balance, except for the fact that most people know when they're not feeling well.
Right.
So you really don't have to get overly specific. If you just, for lack of a better expression, feel like crud, well, you don't need to break down the individual supplements. Your body's not working right. It doesn't have enough of the quality food and supplement components that you need. Other areas are toxified and not functioning optimally because they're oxidized. All of those things go into the package.
Well, and you know, the other thing I'm thinking about, so the thyroid is known as a ductless gland because it all of the hormone that the thyroid produces kind of oozes, and it has the greatest effect on its neighboring tissue. So the brain and the heart really depend on thyroid hormone, and obviously they've evolved in close proximity to it. I wonder what role what's going on in the mouth has on actually crippling the thyroid over time.
Oh, it has a great deal of effect. I mean, the thyroid, due to the nature of its blood flow and its perfusion, it's a little toxin vacuum. I mean, probably your biggest toxin vacuum is the liver, with its detoxification mechanisms. But because of the fact, like you just said, the shared, and that's a good point. I quite honestly had not thought of that.
Well, because we think about microbes in the gut that actually alter the pH of the gut in order to proliferate. So they know that a very low pH, a high acid level, doesn't work for H. pylori. So one of the things that H. pylori does is it interrupts through signals that it sends to the nervous system to actually slow gut motility and also turn up the pH so it has a more alkaline environment so that it can then proliferate. So I'm thinking to myself, if thyroid hormone affects all of these health factors and these things are starting in the mouth in such a close proximity, it's almost like it's opportunistically going to destroy the thyroid to make proliferation easier.
Certainly, it's very logical that whatever amount of dental toxins you have, dental pathogens, an unproportionate share is going to be taken up by the thyroid than some remote organ or remote gland. So just by proximity in the neck, the thyroid is going to get exposed to a lot more direct, highly potent toxins coming from the mouth than most other areas of the body. I think that's pretty clear.
The book is called Hidden Epidemic. You can get it at Amazon.com or you can go to Dr. Levy's website. And you should go to Dr. Levy's website. There's lots of good stuff there. Plug your website again, Dr. Levy.
PeakEnergy.com, P-E-A-K Energy.com.
And remember, the best vitamin C you can take is the vitamin C from Live On Labs. I take it every single day. I never miss a day. I take their glutathione supplement as well because the truth of the matter is, I need to protect myself from the things that I don't know exist and I can't fix right now. And the best defense is to increase glutathione and vitamin C levels in your body so that they can quench those free radicals that are being spun off by these bad actors that Dr. Levy was just talking about. Would you agree with me on that one?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those two things along with magnesium are far and away the most important things for combating and normalizing oxidative stress in the body, which is the bottom line.
Thanks for being on the show today, Dr. Levy.
Okay, thank you, Carl. Thanks
Talk
for
soon.
Having me.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
All right, so that's it for today's show. Hope everybody got something good out of it. Don't forget to check out Zad Chow's website, LessLikely.com. And we'll see you about it tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio, and thank you for listening today.